See, that feels a little bit like paying for a meal before you eat it. Which I think I'd rather do most of the time. Oh, wow. So, yeah. So, I think the most nervous person in the room is my wife. Only because she really likes it here. And it's kind of saying a lot because when we got here, I kind of walked off to the side where the trees are back here because I felt a little nauseous. It's been good to be here for, I measure my life in kids. So it was right before Amos was born, we started coming. So he's three. So for 3 years, it's been good to get to know people here and to be a part of this body. And so glad and excited, but nervous. I have some friends and family that don't usually come here that are here. And I don't know if they're here because they like to watch a train wreck. But they are here, which I don't know what to do with. I guess the other thing is, I was thinking earlier today, like Brett's not here. So, two things. Brett's not here. So, there was my father-in-law who was here met a woman this morning who's, this is her first time. And I just want to say I'm sorry. Brett will be back in a couple weeks. Even your good hands next week. Chet's here, so you're going to be good. But that was the second thing is, like, Brett's not here. We could just call it a day and go home. Nobody immediately got up, so which I may have. So I was thinking about, like, what I need to do at this point is to get you to trust me enough to walk with me a little bit on a journey, but not too much where, like, it might not be a little dangerous. So I don't know if we've done it, but we'll move on. I need somebody to be really... Caleb, maybe you can help. I'm going to hide these over here, and maybe someone else can... I'm going to leave them somewhere. I need to leave them somewhere. We're going to leave them right here. All right, so just remind me, I can't wrap this thing up until I find my keys. I've been thinking about, had this kind of like wrestling with these ideas for a while, and then I had a conversation with Brett, and he said, would you like to speak? And I was like, so I was like, okay, so I immediately knew I'm wrestling with this stuff, we're going to do this. So we'll start telling the story. So you get Adam. And Genesis. And if you haven't read Genesis in a while, it's a wild story. I think sometimes we think we know what it says until we go back and look at it, and it's interesting. So Adam, right? So God makes Adam, and he makes this garden, and then he places Adam in it. And I remember, man, a long time ago. I was administering the ACT or the SAT, I can't remember. It's like one of those things, we don't trust high schools, so we have to like have this outside company tell us if they're qualified for college. So I was given the test. So there's a lot of like long, quiet stretches where like they're working on whatever section with their number two, filling in bubbles or whatever, and they have to be quiet. And my job is like kind of to walk around and make sure they're not cheating and whatever. So they're not moving too fast in their booklet that they're writing in the right section. No calculators or whatever. So, but I'm reading. You need to bring a book because it's going to be a little bit, you're going to be there a while. So I'm reading a book, and I'm reading this book, and he's kind of like talking about the story of Adam naming the animals and this whole story. And I just was really like, I was having trouble like being quiet and like, because like I, when I get excited, I start to pace, and like I start like I'll probably make noises and say stuff out loud or throw a book or something. So I was like trying to like hold it, but it was just really interesting because again, a lot of the stories that we think we know, when we get in the middle of it, it's like, whoa, this is a more interesting story than I ever thought. Again, like he puts Adam in the garden, and then he says he brought the animals to Adam to see what he would name them, which is wild, like. This is God who just made everything, right? He's going to see what Adam would name. Anyway, I think that's interesting, but not the point. So he's going to name these animals, and he brought them to him. And I was wondering, and I don't know, so I'm just like, we're just going to figure this out. At the end of the day, if I'm not right about this part, it's better than what I think. But I was wondering if the brought them to him is a little more, that the Hebrew might be a little more spacious than like Adam sitting on a rock and like God lining these animals up on a straight and a single file and then walking to him and he's like, monkey, giraffe, hippo. Like, this kind of disinterested, I'm looking at this thing. I was wondering, it seems like the land's a little bigger. You have one major river coming into Eden and then four rivers coming out and they're all like going into like, what is this, like to water whole lands. It seems a little bit bigger than like this idea of, again, I'm stealing from this book, of like a little stream, a little quaint cottage, and like Adam just kind of waving and the animals like being there. But like to actually like maybe he had to like kind of like he brought them to the garden, so like he has to go find them. So he's looking for these animals and like maybe possibly, I mean like he's gonna have to like name them, right? So he needs to name one is fine. If there was just one animal, this would be fairly easy. But he's got to name this one. And then another one comes. So I'm looking for similarities and differences. I've got to figure out how this animal is different than this animal and how it's the same. But so like the first one walks up and it's tall and it's hairy. It's got long hair. It's got a long face, four legs, like skinny legs. Bottom of the feet are kind of big. It's a strong animal. It's tall. I'm going to call it a horse. But then all of a sudden there's this other four-legged creature and it walks up and or I walk up to it, whatever it is I'm doing. And so it's four-legged and it's hairy also, but it's like fluffier and the face is squishier, it's not so long. And the feet, like they're big still, it's four legs, but like they're bigger. But there's like kind of pads and like claws, like sharp. You don't want to mess with those kind of claws. And like the teeth are different. Like the horse, I didn't think about the teeth of the horse until I saw the teeth of this other animal. So like these teeth are like long and sharp and scary. Those teeth look like squares. This is different. This is a different creature. The tails are different. I'm gonna call this thing a liger. God has given Adam this like job, this the ability to name the need even the desire to name all of these animals to class. So like in our bones is this idea like classifying, naming, labeling, organizing. It's what we do as a people. It's what we've done since Adam. This is a good thing. This is pre-fall. This has led to all sorts of great things. This has led to periodic tables. This has led to like constellations. Amen. And this has led to like so many things. When you're cleaning a room, I was going to ask, has anyone cleaned a room? And I was thinking, like, that's a ridiculous question. But then you have kids, and you realize it's not a ridiculous question. If you've ever, I mean, like, not my kids clean rooms. They love to clean rooms. They're really good at it. But like, probably better at it than I am. But like, if you're going to clean a room, what you're going to do is like, you're gonna find stuff and you start organizing in stacks. Like, I have books over here, and then I find these are, we'll just put clothes here for a minute, and then I'm going to put the balls over here, and then I'll put shoes over here. But then you start to create a pile, like, this don't fit yet, so you start like, this is a bat, it's not a ball, but we'll stretch this category out to sporting equipment, and then you find a cleat, which is like shoe and sporting equipment. And you're stumped. But you have this, like, you've got to clean the room. So you have this, like, a restlessness in you until you find out where this thing goes. I've got to have a space for everything, and then everything needs to be in its place. Like, it's just in our bones to be able to do this. And so we need. It's not just, like, an ability or a desire. It's, like, a need. I need to be able to do this thing. And we feel a little bit restless when we can't do this, which I really like. God gave this thing to us. Whew, he did. So then Exodus 3, we're just going to skip ahead. Moses is wandering the desert with father-in-law's sheep, right? And he's tending them. It's just like his life is over. But he's in the middle of this desert, and there's this bush that is burning and yet not being burned. And it gets his attention because it would. And it's speaking to him. Again, these are wild stories. They're so good because they're so wild. And so it's speaking to him, and he comes close, and God gives him this whole, like, mission. This is what you're supposed to do. You need to go back to Egypt. You need to tell the Israelites their God has been listening to their cries. I'm going to rescue them. And Moses is, you know, hemming and hawing about this thing. But then he finally says, who am I supposed to tell them sent me? And the voice of the bush answers, I am. Tell them I am sent you, which is a very unsatisfactory answer. Like, there's, like, I exist. So one that exists was told me to tell you this. I am who I am. It's the, we'll get back to this later, but I think this is interesting. I first heard this concept reading Sproul, and he talked about, like, this is the unspeakable tetragrammaton. Like, these are, like, four letters. They don't even have consonants. They don't have vowels. You can't say this. Like, you can't even pronounce it. Like, this is a very unsatisfactory answer. I'm supposed to go back and tell them to do this wild stuff to get ready for, like, their deliverer to come, and I can't even tell them what the name is. You have Yahweh. It's just our best guess, being evasive, which is interesting. A little bit in there. I used to go to the Deer Woods, which is, there's stuff back here. I need to fix it. We used to go to the Deer Woods with my dad, and the Deer Woods are different than regular woods, not because you always see deer, but because they're the Deer Woods. You go to the Deer Woods because that's where the people go that want to kill deer. They go to the Deer Woods. And you're going to the Deer Woods even when it's not deer hunting season. You're going to the Deer Woods to get things ready. So if you know of a deer hunter, they could possibly be in the Deer Woods, like, all year. Like, it's exciting. So you go in the Deer Woods, like, because they have to, like, there's a lot of, like, you're trying to, like, bait these deer, right? So there's a lot of, like, I'm going to put corn in these barrels on with a timer, and they're going to sit there in these fields, and the timer every now and then is going to let some corn out, so the deer gets really comfortable coming to this area to eat this. And then the deer's like, oh, man, this is great. This corn is always here. And then he starts to tell his friends, and they start to show up, and where this corn, like manna, it's just coming. Like, we don't know, but it's just great. And so they keep coming, and they're almost like, and you have the little, like, idol there that they start to worship because it's giving them food, and they're out in the middle. And then deer season comes, and then you shoot them. But right after the Deer Woods with my dad, he would use the CB radio a lot. And, like, if you're using a CB radio, like, there's a skill to that. Like, the language is interesting. And so I would just listen and be fascinated at the conversations. And, like, so one of the things that I remembered from that when I was thinking about the story was he would ask for your handle, and your handle was your name. So God will not give Moses a handle for him. He won't give him anything to hold on to. He doesn't give him a name. And we so want to hold on, to figure things out, to be able to hold on to God. And this gives us a bit of a restlessness. So we're going to fast forward a little bit Moses' story. We're going to go past the story, then we're going to come back to a story. We're going to go to, where are we going to? Oh, so, like, Moses is talking to God, and he says, I'm begging you. I want to see your glory. And then he says, we know each other, name, like, personal name to name basis, like, we're good. So here's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to take you, and I'm going to put you in the cleft of a rock, and then I'm going to go by you. You can't see my face, because if you see my face, you'll die. So I'm going to run by you, and then I'm going to stick my hand out and so that you can't see my face, and then you can see my back. Isn't this a weird story? I mean, we're just reading the scripture. We're not, like, this is what was going on. It's interesting when we read it. It's like, this is kind of a weird story. So God, like, because I'm told in John, like, God's spirit, like, he doesn't have a body. I don't know what to do with this. So he's like, passing by, don't see my face. He's like stiff-arming him. You can't see my face, but then you can see. It's almost like you could see where I just was. Every time's a little strong. I'm not going to say any crazy generalizations yet. God often, when he reveals himself, he conceals himself. He, like, that mystery doesn't go away. So even in the revelation, there's mystery. And we don't like it, and we love it. When we give a gift, we'll give, like, a Christmas gift, right? We bring a gift to someone, and we spend a lot of money and time wrapping it up. I can't see what this thing is exciting. What does the paper make me want to do? Open it. The concealment makes me desire the revelation. like, so when my wife gets really dressed up, that's just... How are we doing, Tracy? So one more Moses story. Moses goes up Mount Sinai, and he's meeting with God. They had already had a crazy experience. They don't want to talk to God. You go do this. So Moses goes up the mountain, and he's with God. He's been gone for a while, and everyone gets restless. And so they're like, okay, tell you what. I don't know about this Moses guy. I don't know if he's coming back, but let's make an idol so we can worship proper. So Aaron's like, all right. So, he's just bored. I don't know what's going on. For whatever reason, he says, okay. So they give him all the earrings and the nose rings, and they give them to him, and he heats them up. He makes it says cast metal idol, and I love that. You cast metal, you've done this a lot, right? You got any metal workers here? Right? You heat the stuff up, and then until the solid becomes a liquid, and then when it's a liquid, you can pour it. And you can pour it into a mold, a cast, and you can, whatever mold you pour it into, it'll look like the thing that you wanted it to look like. It gets in there and it sits, and when it cools off, comes out the shape. So let's make this cast. So they make this golden calf, and out of the cast metal, it cools off, wrap their hands around it. The thing that is interesting to me about this, and Rollins pointed this out not too long ago, and I thought this was, I said, wait, I missed this, that they could wrap their hands around it, and they could hold it, and they could say, this is what Yahweh is like. Because they said, this is the God that brought us up out of Egypt. So it's not that they're really intentionally worshiping another God. This is their version, their creation of Yahweh. This is the God that brought, it's not a different God. This is the God that brought us up out of Egypt. This is what he looks like. And that's the scariest part of this whole story. Because at the same time, Moses is up on the mountain with Yahweh, the real one, not the calf. And he's being told to tell the people not to do this very thing. At the same time, they're doing this thing, which is wild. And then God's like, you got to go down there. They did it already. Jesus, let's talk about Jesus, which is way, so we're going to fast forward some. So Jesus warns about hell a few times, which we're uncomfortable with, but it just happens. And so he warns about hell, and he warns about hell in different circumstances. And I was kind of looking into like the different places. I mean, that makes me sound like I was really doing this on purpose. I was reading a book, and it was just talking about it. I didn't do it like that's. Anyway, I was reading this book. So he was talking about the different places where Jesus talks about hell. And one of the places was when he said, if you call your brother a fool. I'm like, really? There's so many worse things to be doing. There's so many, but this is the thing. Like, when you call your brother a fool, it's not the only place, but it is one place. I'm like, and Jesus, I feel like, doesn't waste words. And so what in the world is the big deal? It's kind of my question. Like, what's the big deal? I call my brother a fool. What's going on? I think that's a good question. So we can diminish. When I call someone a fool, I diminish their humanity. Like that. So that same thing in me that wants to classify, label, categorize, put things in like pigeonholes, and now we kind of see this with this idol thing, which we'll come back to. Put God into. Wants to do with people, we want to do with people. And we could say, fool. And do you remember the story? There's a story Jesus was dismissed as a demon-possessed Samaritan, which I think is just laughable and funny. But like, if I can dismiss Jesus as a demon-possessed Samaritan, I don't have to listen to him. He's just a demon-possessed Samaritan. Moving on. This guy's just a fool. I don't have to hear him out. I don't have to allow the human, I'm diminishing the humanity of the human by labeling them one thing. And we do this all the time. This is what we do. We label this person's just a, and it's that just a piece. I think that's interesting. I was challenged, I guess, two years ago. This is a particular story, but it pulls out to a bigger story of theologically challenged by a guy that you could dismiss as a meth addict. Meth addict. Oh, it's just a meth addict. But this meth addict was teaching me things about God that I hadn't learned before. And I was like, what? And I was interested in this. that I could not just dismiss him as a meth addict. Here is a fellow human made in the image of God who also has a meth addiction. And that's not the totality of who he is, but that's an aspect of his history, his story, and what's going on. So this isn't like, I think that we can talk about people in a way that we limit where we can get our hands all the way around. And like, I know this person entirely. Like, you don't have, he's just a meth addict. I've had the privilege of working at the mission for 7 years, and like and I've learned a lot about God, about life through a lot of people that that I even would have just dismissed. Oh, this dude's just a crackhead. He's just a drunkard. He's just lazy. Like, we all have like stuff in our stories, but that is like, but our sin does not define us. Like, our addictions don't define us. We're bigger than this. I have known my wife. In like 1992, I saw her pretending to study in the library at Pace High School in her overalls and Birkenstocks, and I knew from there. So, but I've known her, like, it was, what is it, 2017 now? So I've known her a long time, and I still don't know her. Like, she's different. She keeps changing, and there's no bottom to this thing. There's no, like, end to this thing. And I think that, like, we're not paying attention to the people right around us, and we don't know the depths. Like, they're, like, this meth addict, like, there is no end to the depth of this guy. Like, he's created in the image of God. Amen. He's created in the image of God. Like, I can't fathom the bottom of this guy. I think that's interesting. I think that we don't think about that a lot. So there's something in there. Also, pushing a little bit, this is parenthetical, but I think, whatever. people apologize for being human a lot of times. My issue is, you're not. Stop apologizing. And even if you were, there'd be nothing to apologize for. Like, Adam was human for ever how long it was before the fall. And then he fell short of the glory of God. In 1 Corinthians 11, it said that the glory of God is man, right? And then Paul says, we've fallen short of the glory of God. We've fallen short. We're fallen humanity. You can apologize for being fallen, but you can't apologize for being human. We're still in the process of becoming human. Like, Jesus came around and said, hey, the second Adam, remember he came around and said, hey, this is what it's like to be human. This is what it's like to live out of your whole heart. This is what it's like. And like, now we've been born again, and he's given us his spirit, to be able to live new, like, human lives. Humanity is a beautiful thing. We're broken, we're busted, we're fallen. So you can apologize for being fallen if you want to, but you can't apologize for being human. Like, one more phrase. Like, if we want to do what God does, what does God do? Eventually, he becomes human. I don't know what to do with that. It's just wild. That's in the parentheses. But I think it's just that, so the diminishing of humanity, diminishing of the humanity of the humans, is very similar to the diminishing of the godness of God. And I think that's where we're at in this story. I think that's why it's so important to Jesus. Like, this is like the image of God that you're talking about. Embrace the fullness of this person. Listen. So, we are not, like, we're not going to be tempted, I don't think. Maybe you are. It's not in my thing to, like, create an idol out of metal or stone or wood. This is probably not what we're going to do. And say, oh, look what I made. I made Yahweh. Look, it's just not our culture. But our post-enlightenment rational minds want to systematize God to the point that we can make an idol out of our idea of God. I think that's the scary part. Okay, it's not a bad idea. We're supposed to try to understand God. Please, let's move forward. Let's try to figure him out. Let's try to figure it out. And the metal is going to be hot. It's going to be liquid. But let's keep it liquid. Let's keep it hot, so that it doesn't like become like once the fire goes out and it gets cold. It's like it's done. I can go all the way around this thing. If I had a concept of God that I can put my mind all the way around, not my hands all the way around, but my mind all the way around, it's idolatry. I want to keep that thing hot. I need to keep the fire hot so it stays liquid, so I'm able to like listen and be changed. And I think the thing that keeps it hot is humility. I think it's humility that keeps the fire going. And humility doesn't say I don't know anything. What was that song you guys sang? Like, I'm confident of this. what does he say? I can't remember what he said. I remember that part. It's okay. But like, there's a confidence that comes in different places, and I'm confident of this and this and this. But it's, humility doesn't say, I don't know anything. It's, I don't know everything. And so, and humility is open to asking questions. I'm curious about this. I wonder about, or listening to the questions of other people, and or listening to the opinions of other people, and not just to be able to answer real quick, real fast, but to be able to think about it. Be able to say, I don't know. Let me think about it. Like humility says, I don't know. It's fine, and it's fine to not know. Am I humble enough to listen to other people? Am I exposing myself to people outside of my stream of thought? Like on my bookshelf, are there people from, is it all the same authors and same publishing company? Or is it like, am I willing to listen to other people and not agree? I think it makes us nervous. I think we're afraid of like, this might pull up doubts in us. And I think we're afraid of doubts. But I don't think we need to be as afraid of doubts as we think we are. I love the story of Matthew 28. Matthew 28, the disciples, these are the disciples. They've been with Jesus 3 years. He was crucified. He was raised from the dead. They saw him. They touched him. They touched him. They ate with him. He's eating food with them. He's been resurrected. He's with them. And he's at the top of the mountain. And he's about to ascend to the Father, whatever that means. And he's there. And he... Matthew records, he says, and they worshiped. So the disciples are, and they worshiped, but some doubted. So like, these aren't two competing things. So take the day is the disciples, make a big circle around the disciples, and then draw a smaller circle in the middle, and those are the doubters. And you have worshiping doubters there. And it's fine. Because I'm like, I think that we're afraid to doubt, because I think the doubting, I think what that is it makes us worried. I think that exposes the fact that many of us think that our rightness with God is based on our right belief or right theology. If I don't believe this stuff right, then I'm not connected to God. I think that that's why we don't want to doubt, because if I'm asking questions, if I'm thinking about this too much, well, then what's going to happen? Because I can lose. Even people who think they can't lose their salvation are worried about this stuff, right? Because they're like, well, it's a slippery slope, I start believing this or listen to this guy a little bit or asking this question, then where am I going to end up? Because my rightness with God is based on my understanding of who he is, my right theology. Which leads us to, I think that we would all say, no, I don't think anybody in this room would say, like, I have it all figured out, and you have to have it all figured out in order to belong to God. I don't think anyone would say that, but I think that we're in, like, percentages. You have to have this much figured out. You have, like, so what's the percentage? At this point, like, we're, like, going to measure this. It just gets interesting. Interesting? That's a weird word. Interesting? It's an interesting word. Is it interesting or interesting? I don't know. I'm interested. I don't know. But it gets to the point where we start asking the question, how much do I have to believe to belong? And I don't have any easy answers. I don't have any easy answers. I have an answer. I don't know if it's easy. And it might be, I think it's right. I think that, I'm throwing it out there. Brett's not here. I just belong. And I start to believe things about the one I belong to. Like, he has made me his. Like, I was dead in trespasses and sins. Romans 5, we read this morning. Like, right, God demonstrated his love in this, that he died for us when we were sinners. He didn't wait for us to get our act together or believe certain things. He just came and got us. And then we start to believe things about the one who came and got us and who started to rescue us. And so we start to learn things about this God. I'm confident of certain things, but I got a whole bunch of questions. And I do think that's okay. The questions are fine. God's not afraid of your questions. And like, I can worship and doubt at the same time. That the opposite of faith is not doubt, but the opposite of faith is certainty. I've been wrestling with that one for a little bit. Faith is being comfortable with not knowing. Paul says we're supposed to walk by faith and not by sight. If I see something, I no longer need faith. That was one of the other songs we sang this morning. Once I see the object of my faith, I no longer need faith. I see it. Hope, we no longer need hope once we get the thing we hope for. I get the thing I hope for. I'm not hoping anymore. I've got it. being comfortable with not knowing, the mystery, to live in that mystery. Like, God has revealed himself, but he's still a mystery. Like, he's concealing himself as he's revealing himself. And I love that. I don't, like, I want that thing in me that's been put in my bones from Adam. It's like that I want to understand him. If I ever understood him, I would not want to do this anymore. I would be out. I'm out. As soon as I felt like I understood this God, he's no longer God. Like, if I can compete, if I can, like, figure him, if I can wrap my mind all the way around him. It's like trying to create a theory of everything. Keep working on this idea. But there's always, like, this phenomena, this outlier over there saying, hey, look at me. I'm not included in this theory. You're going to have to do it better. You're like, we keep learning stuff about this God who's living and breathing, who's not an artifact, but who's alive. And we start learning, and he's personal. He's like a living, he's a being. And we can't even understand the beings that are sitting right next to us. We can't get to the bottom of them. How much, if God's a line, humans are rays. If God goes in all directions at the same time, a human's at least a ray. He's going like, so like, if I can't even understand the person sitting next to me and get to the bottom of them, how am I supposed to get to the bottom of God? But the thing is, like, to keep trying to figure it out. I lost my keys. Have you seen my keys? Yes. I found my keys that I had lost and I found them. If I keep looking for them now that I found them, I'm mad. I'm crazy. The jury's out already. But if I keep looking for these keys that I found, but Tozer talks about this idea of to have found him and yet seek him still. Love it. It doesn't mean I haven't found him. It just means that I haven't found him completely yet. We know, right? Paul's saying, like, we know, we see through a mirror dimly. We know in part, but we don't know in full yet. Sometimes we think we know in full. Sometimes we're afraid we don't, so we say we do. And we don't let any other thing in that might say, I don't know. I know a few things about God. I don't want to lose those. I know that he's good, right? So, like, this is the God who just invented out of his head. He just invented the sunset, the duck-billed platypus. Good luck, Adam. It was cheap, I'm sorry. The sunsets, the duck-billed platypus, and the orgasm. He just invented those. Those were his idea. And if he had those ideas, how much better is he? Like, the wisdom of man is more foolish than the foolishness of God. Like, we just can't comprehend this God. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't stop. We shouldn't stop trying. Keep knowing him. Like, keep knowing him and knowing that I can't know him. I have found my keys. I have found him, but yet I seek him still. I'm going to continue to seek him, continue to find him, continue to try to find him, and all over the place, because there's so much more. That's mystical thinking, and we're uncomfortable with the word mystic. Can I push pause a minute? There's a lot of times I, like, said something, and I wanted to tell you who said it, but if I told you who wrote it, you'd shut down immediately. It's like, oh, I know who that guy is. He's a heretic. I mentioned a few that I thought you would like. I mentioned Tozer, I mentioned Sproul. I was like, yes. But if Sproul said something, we may give him the benefit of the doubt, even if we think, oh, that sounds weird. But if somebody else says something that even sounded logical, like, you know that dude, I'm not even listening to it. Am I just willing to listen to people I don't agree with? It's fine. But so I was going to talk about Tozer, considered himself a mystic. What do you do with that? But I was refreshed, like, the other side of that with Donald Miller, who you probably love. He said that anyone who believes in the Trinity is a bit of a mystic. I was like, there are things about this thing I don't know, I can't understand, I can't wrap my mind around. But Tozer said that his definition of mystic is one who, let me read it right, to know that which passes knowledge, which seems a lot like Paul. To know that thing which passes knowledge. I can't understand it, but I know you're good. I know you love me. I know you're for me. You rescued me, and so I'm going to trust you. I'm trusting you, and I have faith in you because I don't know, but I know you're good. I'm going to keep after you. Just not stopping to learn, not stopping to know. I don't get to the end. Land surveyor that's trying to figure out how big this property is, and he keeps walking, and he just keeps walking. And he just keeps walking. Just don't stop walking. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for my brothers and sisters here. Thank you for being with us. Thank you that you are the unknowable one. Thank you that you exist in the unapproachable light, yet we still long to approach you. Thank you that we're not left with nothing. Father, you have left so much. There's so much. Sometimes it feels like just crumbs on a road, but you're leading us to a good place. Your heart is good, and you are for us. So, Father, give us a hunger for you, to know you, and not just know about you, but to know you. Give us a hunger to even want to know more about you and to be joyful at the frustration of not being able to know everything. But thank you for being with us, Father. Thank you for loving us. And thank you for this morning.